When we choose love and compassion, we create connection. In my Life and Laughter podcast, we find ways to choose love over fear. I'm your host, Perry Kinder. Hey everyone, welcome back to my Life and Laughter podcast. I hope you all had a beautiful Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or Yule or Solstice or whatever it is you celebrated. I hope it was everything that you could have hoped for. And I'm recording this during Twixmas, which is that week between Christmas and New Year's. And I love this. This is probably one of my favorite weeks of the year. Of course, I've had a cold, so bear with me. But anyway, Twixmas is something I look forward to every year. I have several part-time jobs, and one of my part-time jobs encourages me to take off the last 2 weeks of December. And they're like, I'm like, don't twist my arm. All right, I'll do it. If you're going to force me to take it off, I'll take it off. So I do. So I have 2 weeks where I don't have to do any writing. And this year, because I teach Monday classes for yoga, I didn't have a yoga class on Christmas morning, and I won't have a yoga class, or I didn't have a yoga class on New Year's Day. So there's been a break from my yoga teaching a little bit for the past couple of weeks. And I've spent a lot of time this week doing just whatever the hell I want. And I've learned that when I have free time, I'm either reading or napping or organizing something. Not deep cleans, but throwing out old things and donating clothes that maybe are in good condition that other people could wear that I don't wear anymore. Just going through my cabinets. And I just love that. I love this downtime. I also spent a lot of time being bored. I had nothing to do or nothing that I needed to do. And so I just spent some time daydreaming, looking out the window, allowing my brain to stop processing. Tom kept asking me if I was okay. He's like, are you all right? You're not saying anything. It's like, I know. I don't have to, so I'm not going to. So it was just beautiful. Just beautiful. And this is the first episode of 2024. So happy new year. Welcome to 2024. And winter is not just here, not just coming. It is here. Pretty mild here in Utah so far. Last year at this time, we had the Snowmageddon where we shoveled snow from October until June. It was just a nightmare of snow. And this year is a lot easier. Not a lot of snow, but very, very cold. Winter is very difficult for me. So I've spent a lot of time the past few weeks, the past couple of months, preparing myself for winter. I've set an intention to treat this winter as sacred, as a time for reflection, as a time for ease, as a time for coziness. I'm reading a book by Catherine May, who's just a brilliant writer. Read all of her books. It's called Wintering, The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times. And I think 2024 counts as difficult times. I'm just going to throw it out there. It's unfortunately an election year. So we have a presidential election this year, which means there will be a metric ton of hate speech, hate memes, hate everything for the foreseeable future. We also have a war continuing in Ukraine and Gaza and North Africa, Syria, you know, pick a country. We have continued turmoil regarding women's rights and LGBT rights in America. And it seems like everybody is just so angry. So just the title of this book, Wintering, The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times, makes my heart beat and my breath slow down just a little bit. Catherine May writes about using the healing powers of our natural world to get through this time. In September, I did a podcast on the art of coziness, how to prepare yourself for the cold months, how to incorporate hygge into your life. You should go back and listen to it again, episode 96. It's really got some good tips for making the winter a little bit more bearable. But this isn't about creating coziness for this episode. It's a challenge to use winter for renewal. Nature does that automatically. Animals hibernate, trees fall dormant, lakes freeze, snakes and frogs go inactive. And for people in Scandinavian and Arctic cultures, they're either preparing for winter or experiencing winter. Those are their two seasons, preparation or experiencing. In Catherine's beautiful book, she describes wintering as a different type of preparation and a different type of practice. She writes, once we stop wishing it is summer, winter can be a glorious season. And I'm going to have to take her word for it because I haven't embraced the glorious season part. I very much have a hate relationship with winter. I'm a summer baby. I'm drawn to warmth like moth to a bug zapper. I just want to feel the sun on my skin. I want to have my skin exposed to the sun, all the things about summer. So the word I'm focusing on this season, along with sacred, is retreat. And when I think of a retreat, I picture doing yoga on a beautiful beach, snorkeling in crystal blue waters, drinking fruity alcoholic beverages, and basking in the warmth of the sun. But this is a different definition of retreat. It's the act of moving back or withdrawing. It's a very conscious time where we slow down, rest, sleep, dream, read, where you let your spare time expand, or you just create spare time. Long dark nights are perfect for staying inside, especially when it's cold or stormy. But if you're thinking, if I stay locked inside all winter with my family, I will go full on Jack Nicholson from The Shining. You might be surprised. We've bought into the idea, and we continue to buy into the idea, that busyness equals value. And hopefully my listeners know I don't believe that. That I don't believe that is true. Our being alive equals value. How we practice love and kindness and joy, that equals value. Our busyness is not a reflection of our value. So learning how to stop the busyness, maybe just for this winter season of retreat. So one thing that we can do to teach our families about retreat, and bear with me, it's going to sound crazy, bananas, but teaching your kids that after dinner, or teaching your spouse, your partner, whoever, that after dinner we turn off the screens and everyone has to find something to do for 1 hour. Okay, or maybe 30 minutes. Okay, maybe 15 minutes. You start small. That doesn't mean doing chores, like don't tell your kids to go clean their rooms for an hour or to go do their homework for an hour. No. Instead of encouraging your children or a spouse to go do something productive, you're going to do the opposite. Encourage your kids, your spouse, your dog, whatever, to maybe read a book or do some cross-stitching or some embroidery. Maybe tie flies for fishing season. Maybe thumb through a beautiful photography book, which you can find at the library. There are a million different beautiful books at the library. You can memorize a poem or a monologue. You can write a short story. You can work on a puzzle. You can color with markers or draw pictures. You can just sit and pet the dog or the cat. You can write a thank you card. You can handwrite a letter to a parent or a grandparent. And unless your kids are really little, don't organize this as an activity. Don't give them things to do. The idea is that your family will be bored and they have to find something to occupy their time. You can offer suggestions and you can have things that they can do, but it is not a planned family activity. That's just too much work. Going back to the busyness. No, this is as easy as possible. After an hour or whatever time you allotted for this time of boredom, gather the family back together, and maybe you're just by yourself. Come back to your senses and spend a few minutes thinking or writing or talking about what you did and what you experienced and how your brain feels. And here's another level, like the next level up. Everyone has to do their activity, whatever they're doing, in silence. You can make exception for real questions, not questions like, are we done yet? Or why is this so stupid? Or why are we doing this? But as our brain settles, you might find yourself pondering some very interesting concepts. And once the time is over, maybe having a quiet conversation. Nothing that's heated, nothing that's a debate, just a conversation about what your mind thought about during that silent time. The idea isn't to create something. That's not the purpose here. But to use your brain for something other than fear and work and stress and worry. It is a retreat, a withdrawal every night into boredom, into just doing things like a puzzle or a book or a magazine where your brain is not engaged in problem solving. You can also bring soft, warm light into your home. It seems like our entire lives are lit by computer screens or phone screens or LED or fluorescent lighting, and it's all just so glaring. It's so bright. But the winter gives us that opportunity to dim the lights, light the candles. If you have a fireplace, maybe have the light of the fireplace, the warmth of the fireplace. In Utah, we can't usually use wood fireplaces because our air here is so disgusting in the winter. But maybe you have a gas fireplace that you can use. Use the soft, warm light to create a sense of togetherness and comfort as you go through this nightly ritual of boredom. Don't be afraid to walk outside. I've been trying to embrace this more and more, and thank heavens for my dog. Otherwise, I would never take a step outside this house in the wintertime. But my dog needs her twice daily walks that she's trained me to take her on. And I almost never regret it. If it's really, really biting cold, yeah, I'm counting the minutes till we're back in our house. But don't be afraid to walk outside, especially on the cold, clear nights when the air is crisp and the stars are bright. Look for animal prints in the snow. You'd be surprised how many cats or mice or bunnies or foxes walk through your neighborhood. Notice how many trees have gone dormant for the season. Maybe find an off-leash trail and let your dog explore the area, because my dog loves snow. She would play in the snow all day. And find ways to instill wonder, to create that sense of awe. That's my resolution for this year. I don't usually make resolutions, but this year, my resolution is to find ways to put myself in positions that make me feel awe. Last year, my resolution was to create more gratitude in my life, which completely, completely succeeded. I have so much gratitude for my life and for everything in it. And this year, I want to feel awe, absolute awe. Catherine May writes in her book, "In moments of helplessness, I always seem to travel north. I have a kind of wanderlust, an urge toward the top of the world where the ice intrudes. In the cold, I find I can think straight because the air feels clean and uncluttered." Where can you go in the cold that feels clean and uncluttered? We have a place here in Utah called Antelope Island. It's in the middle. Well, it's not in the middle. It's on the Great Salt Lake. Sometimes it's not an island anymore with the drought. But it's a beautiful dark skies location. And you bundle everybody up, and the best time to visit the island is in the winter because there are no brine flies to get in your teeth and your eyes and your face. And the stars just light up the night. It is my goal to go there at least once this winter, just to look at the stars. February in Utah is the best time to see bald eagles. They're at Farmington Bay, they're at Willard Bay, they're on the Weber River. Look in your area for birds that are migrating. You might find all kinds of different beautiful birds you can go watch in the wintertime. And I could mention things like skiing and snowboarding and snowshoeing, blah, blah, blah. But the intention of retreat means dropping the idea of overexertion. That doesn't mean you shouldn't do those things, especially if you love them. But in the concept of retreat, find the quieter, easier activities. Maybe a less arduous snowshoe trail. Or find a spot in the mountains to sit and observe the aliveness, even in the dead of winter. The running of the river, the birds that are flying, the animals that are scurrying. There is so much life in the mountains, even in the wintertime. Catherine is convinced that the cold has healing powers. She says, after all, you apply ice to a joint after an awkward fall. Why not do the same to a life? Applying ice to your life to help reduce the swelling, the nonstop barragement of information. And as you're listening to this, it's almost January 6th, which is the day of Epiphany. I grew up as a Mormon, and Mormons kind of pick and choose their usual Christian traditions. We never celebrated things like Good Friday or Palm Sunday or the Day of Ascension or the Day of Epiphany on January 6th. So I was an adult before I learned about the tradition of this holiday. The Day of Epiphany is a celebration for how a star led the three wise men to visit the baby Jesus after he had been born. It's also the last day of the 12 days of Christmas. Epiphany comes from the Greek word meaning to reveal, as it is when the baby Jesus was revealed to the world. And I have always loved the word epiphany. I don't know why. Epiphany also means not just the revelation of baby Jesus to the world, but a sudden revelation or an insight. An epiphany is that light bulb moment when a great idea just seems to land out of nowhere. It's fitting that the day of Epiphany is celebrated in the winter. Even though I didn't often think of revelation and winter until this year. Because it's when our minds become still and when we have to come back to the darkness, come back to our homes and our families and the quietness of the evenings, that your mind can have those epiphanies. When it stops the overexertion and the overthinking and the overprocessing, when it's given time just to sit and be bored and to daydream, that's when the epiphanies happen. And winter is just beginning as this new year is starting. We have several more weeks of winter, probably in Utah, several more months of winter. And humanity continues to move toward the turbulence of this upcoming year. It will take epiphanies and revelations and new ideas and dreams and dreamers that are conceived during the depth of this season to stem the tide of fear. Winter shows us that as we invest the time to rest and heal and restore and retreat, that we can rise stronger with a better capacity for bringing new ideas to light. And that's all that winter is. It's a slow returning of the light. May writes, "I recognized winter. I greeted it and let it in because nature shows that survival is a practice." We practice survival in the winter. We practice coming back to ourselves, that retreat, the withdrawal, the tuning down, the tuning in. Don't be afraid of winter. That is my goal this winter, is to spend more time in reflection, to wait for the epiphanies that happen, waiting for the spring to come back, the light to come back, and to burst forth with all these beautiful new ideas in the spring. And I challenge you to do the same. Thank you, thank you, thank you for listening. I'm so excited to get this new year started. We have some great guests coming up. Thank you for all your feedback. Thank you for listening and sharing. I love you all. Have a beautiful winter.
To continue your journey toward love and connection, follow me at Life and Laughter Coaching on Instagram and Facebook.